Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Viking Age podcast, the official podcast of thevikingage.com. My name is Chris Shad. I'm a writer for the Viking Age Zone Coverage, Bring Me the News, and the Brookings Register. We do this every Monday with a late week episode right here on the Viking Age YouTube channel. We're in podcast form on Apple and Spotify the very next day. But however you consume us, make sure you rate, comment, like, and subscribe so you never miss a new episode and we can spread the word to the masses. Today's guest is an analyst for Pro Football Network, and his name is Ian Cummings. Welcome to the Viking Age podcast, Ian.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be on. I actually have a funny story. I actually have a Viking Age shirt. All right. I got my start at FanSided. Actually, I was at Rigo's Rag a few years ago, and okay. I got a free shirt as a reward for 1 month, and I chose the Viking Age shirt because I was a big Kirk Cousins guy. I live near East Lansing. So when I was growing up, I was watching him at Michigan State. So long story short to say, I've got a TVA shirt. Love the work you guys do over there.
Yeah, we got a lot going on. And you mentioned Kirk Cousins right off the bat, which is interesting because that's what we have you on for. We're here to talk about some quarterbacks. We're here to talk about your QB1, which we'll get to in a little bit here. But let's just go right into it. Kirk Cousins, he leaves for the Atlanta Falcons this year. I know that you're a Kirk Cousins guy. You just said you're out of East Lansing. You know, how big of a blow do you think it is that the Vikings lost Kirk Cousins this March?
Yeah, and I will say I've learned to be objective. When I was younger, sure, I was like, Kirk Cousins is amazing, right? Now I've come to, like, I've gotten to a happy medium, I think, where it's like, yeah, you know, we know what he is. Last year before he got injured, he was playing like a top 12 quarterback, for sure. He was playing at a very high level. I think his ability to win within the structure of the offense, keep things on schedule, right, give his playmakers chance. It was a very valuable thing for that offense. I think going to Atlanta, it's a big blow for Minnesota, but I also think you already had in the back of your mind the succession plan. You know, you already kind of, you know, you had that orbiting your mind. You knew you needed to think about that. So I think this just accelerates that timeline. We already knew that Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell needed to think about that. Now it just kind of accelerates it. It's like, all right, this offseason, we've got to have an answer, right? And they've obviously gotten the capital to take care of that. I think Kirk Cousins, for what he is very good. He was playing some of his best ball before the injury last year, but now he's a 36-year-old coming off a torn Achilles. So there's some uncertainty there. There's not a lot of long-term viability there. So I think for the Falcons, it was a good move for them too. I think the outcome was good for both teams. Minnesota gets the reset. Atlanta gets a quarterback who helps them win now, which the roster is ready, almost ready to do that. So I think that's my outlook on it for both teams. I think Minnesota, it's a big loss because he's playing very well, but now you get a chance to reset.
And the fun part about this, you and I were talking about this on the air while I was shoveling power cords and, you know, trying to get us on the air on time here. But, you know, Kirk Cousins, with him leaving, the Vikings probably are one of the teams that can decide the most in this draft, especially when you look at the top five with the quarterbacks that are going off the board. You know, how interesting are the Vikings as a team in this year's draft?
Oh, they're very interesting. They're probably the most interesting team for me. I mean, I guess not the most interesting because we know what they're going to do. They don't have a poker face at this point. You've got 11 and 23. You're going to package those up for a trade up. It's just a matter of, can they get to number two? Can they get to number three? Can they get to number four? And who's going to be there, right? Are they going to be able to get Drake May if he somehow falls to three? Or is it going to be JJ McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, right? Who are they going to come away with? We don't know what the outcome is going to be, but we know the avenue they're going to take, right? So I think that part is kind of, it's a unique dichotomy because there is clarity with the route that they're going to take, but the outcome that's going to happen, we don't know that. So they're very interesting in that sense. I think it's going to be tough losing that second first rounder, right? Because ideally you'd like to fill more needs. And I think they have a little less day two capital than some other teams too. So that's going to be a little bit tough, but they did make some nice moves in free agency, got Jonathan Greenard at the edge, Andrew Van Ginkle, and then a few other guys too. So I like what they've been doing. And I think they're going to be a very interesting team in the sense that which quarterback are they going to come away with? Because that's the biggest question. And that's the biggest implication event for them here too.
Well, we might have an idea of which quarterback might be coming off the board, because there's been a lot of steam between the Vikings and Drake May in this draft process. Of course, Josh McCown, their new quarterback coach, he worked with Drake May in high school. There are another slew of numerous connections as well. You have Drake May as your top rated quarterback in this year's class. What makes you think he is QB1, and what makes you think he's QB1 ahead of somebody like Caleb Williams, who everybody who has been, you know, lack of a better term, drooling over the past 2 years?
Yeah, and I do want to preface, my ranking of May as QB1 is not a slight to Williams at all. And I posted my all-time QB rankings since 2021 on Twitter a couple of days ago, and May and Williams are literally right next to each other. Like, they are within a couple hundredths of a point, which is very, very close. They're essentially tied. So it's more like 1A and 1B for me. So anytime I bring that up, I want to bring the context. Caleb Williams is also one of my top quarterbacks ever rated on my scale. Drake May just happens to be a hair higher than him on the scale. So I think there's benefits for both guys. But the reason May comes away with that grade on my scale is, to me, the best way I can articulate it is the combination of physical talent and operational utility. I think as a young quarterback, there is still some volatility with his situational precision, his mechanics, his decision-making, particularly off script and in heat of the moment situations, right? Which, he's a young QB, he's 21 years old. So you're going to see that from time to time. It's not something that makes him a liability. It's not nearly that bad. And I look at what he can do in structure. You know, his talent pops, right? 6'4", around 230, right? Really good athlete in open space. Really, you know, he's got great straight line speed, but he's also very agile in the pocket. I think they slept on sometimes his ability to redirect, sidestep rushers and keep himself clean. But then the arm talent as well, the arm strength, the drive velocity, the angle freedom for such a big guy. He can throw sidearm. He can elongate his release and open throwing windows with that. That's such a unique skill to have for a bigger guy. And he can maintain velocity while doing so. And then going beyond the physical talent, I think the leverage IQ that he has both inside the pocket and looking upfield is incredible. I think his ability to slide in the pocket away from pressure threats, again, keeping himself clean while keeping his eyes upfield. And then he's shown that if he gets a single high look, he can keep that safety where he is, manipulate him into opening a throwing window, and then capitalize with that drive velocity too. So the anticipation, the DB manipulation, the processing ability, I think all those things are there. And then for such a young guy too, he's calling protections. He's changing the look at the line. I think he does a lot of high level QB things so well that you look at the little volatility aspects, like the mechanics, you know, the situational position. Yes, he can improve that. But you know, you look at what he does at such a high level already for such a young player and the talent that he has. I'm willing to see that through because the upside is immense. And I do think what he needs to work on, it's very corrective.
Yeah. Do you think, like, placing him in a situation like Minnesota with Kevin O'Connell, you have Justin Jefferson, you have Jordan Addison, you have a lot of weapons everywhere. Is that the best possible destination for Drake May? Or do you think, you know, somewhere, could he succeed somewhere like New England that might not have as many weapons, but he's able to carry the mail and elevate those players around him?
I think there's trade-offs with each one. I think Minnesota is definitely one of the best landing spots for him because, as you mentioned, they have the offensive line in place. They have weapons in place, right? They have Brian Flores, who's a really good defensive coordinator, who's got a lot of pieces that he likes. So I think it's a team that if you get your quarterback, you can make some noise this year. And I do think there's a short runway on the QB, on a rookie QB contract, to competing again. So I think Minnesota is a great spot. You got the scheme, you got the coaching, you got the supporting talent. New England is a little tougher because they have a lot of room to work on the roster, right? But I do like how he fits Alex Van Pelt's offensive scheme too. I think Van Pelt, the work that he did with Joe Flacco in Cleveland down the stretch last year, Flacco kind of similar in terms of, you know, a big armed quarterback who can really take advantage of those seam balls, those stacked alignments. You know, I do think there's alignment there as well. But yeah, to your point, Minnesota, one of the best fits for him. So you think about a young QB who still has room to refine his game a little bit, but is also already very far along on the processing side and is incredibly talented. Yeah, I'm willing to work with him in that supporting cast because I do think you have the proper elements to incubate his growth.
One of the other things that people kind of talk about is the difference between his 2022 tape and 2023 tape. Some people have said, you know, his 2022 tape is more indicative of what kind of quarterback he could be, but his 2023 tape, you know, he kind of struggled. Phil Longo left North Carolina. There were a couple of adjustments there. You know, is there something to be said for a quarterback who looks really good one year and maybe not as good the next? Or do you think there wasn't really that much of a drop-off between the two seasons?
I do think the drop-off is overblown. I think, you know, it's a big talking point. Oh, he wasn't as good in 2023. Let's all panic, right? I don't think that argument goes past the surface enough because he did drop off a little bit. I do think that is a fair argument to make. But I also think there were still a lot of good reps on tape, man. You look at that Georgia Tech game. It was dominant, man. You look at even Clemson and Notre Dame. Like, there were good moments in those games. Yes, a little volatile, but you want to take the tape as its composite, right? You don't want to just circle bad plays and say, oh, he took a step down. I feel like that's kind of a narrative that needs to be adjusted a little bit because he still did have a lot of great reps on tape. I think for him, you know, losing your offensive coordinator, losing your top weapon in Josh Downs and also Antoine Green as well. There was a lot of turnover in that receiving core. They didn't have Tez Walker for part of the year as well. Offensive line lost a couple of pieces too. So, you know, there was some turnover. And again, those are contextual elements. I never want to use context to drive a conclusion for a quarterback prospect, right? You know, that just kind of helps you get to a clearer picture, right? But you look at the film to reach your conclusion. And my conclusion still is that even as young as 2022, right, he was doing very, very impressive things for such a young QB. And he showed that again in 2023. Yeah, I think some of the supporting cast elements may have played into that volatility that he does still have, but you're still working with an incredibly talented quarterback who shows really bright flashes of anticipation, processing ability, pocket management, all of the bedrock things that you need to do to be a really good QB at the NFL level and to maximize your physical tools. So I think you got to look at the tape as a whole, right? Yes, you can make an argument they took a slight step back. People look at the surface level stats and, you know, use that to support their argument. And hey, that's fair. But the stats don't come close to telling the full story. You got to look at the tape. You got to look at the all 22. And I think you'll still see a talented quarterback who has a lot of upside to be unearthed.
Now, your comparison was Justin Herbert. And I like that idea as a quarterback who is mobile, but not like to the point of Lamar Jackson or Jaden Daniels, particularly in this draft. Some people would also say Josh Allen just because of his physical stature. I see a little bit of Ben Roethlisberger with him, just a big quarterback, tough to bring down. He's got a big arm, has a couple of questionable decisions. Where do you think Drake May's comparison lies? Because I think there's a lot of different quarterbacks you could point to and say, hey, he reminds me of this guy and he reminds me of, you know, maybe somebody else.
Yeah. And I've kind of moved my crosshair a little bit. A lot of people brought up Justin Herbert early on in the cycle. And I do think there's elements of that one there, but I've been leaning toward, and this is one that needs a caveat, needs an asterisk next to it, because Jordan Love is kind of one that I've been leaning towards. I think you can get 2023 Jordan Love sooner rather than later, though. I don't think he needs to sit for 2 or 3 years. I think, you know, he's going to take a few lumps early on, but I do think you look at what he can do pre-snap, what he can do post-snap. I don't think you need to sit him. I don't think he needs that incubation, that pure incubation period, right? Let him learn as he's going along. I think, you know, purely from the physical talent perspective and how he can use his operational tools to elevate and channel his physical traits, Jordan Love and what we saw from Love in 2023, a lot of that pops to me. You know, they're both kind of tall, linear quarterbacks, right, with their builds, right? But they're also really well-built, really stocky. And then you look at the arm talent, right? Jordan Love has effortless arm strength, but he also can channel that from a multitude of arm angles as well, a multitude of platforms, right? And that was such a big part of how he thrived in Matt LaFleur's offense down the stretch, right? His hot streak late in the year and in the playoffs, right? This is a guy who can really win from any kind of platform. He can go off script in the flats, right? Or he can work inside the pocket and use his arm elasticity to widen throwing angles too. So I think Drake May has that same kind of profile, right? You know, Jordan Love is a great athlete too, but he wins from inside the pocket first. And I think Drake May does that too. When he gets out in space as a runner, yeah, you know, he's got some Josh Allen to him, but first he will stay in the pocket. He'll navigate and he'll use his traits to channel that within structure. And I think that's what makes him so special as a prospect, is that you see that. So Jordan Love is the one I'm leaning towards, but I think you can get 2023 Jordan Love sooner rather than later.
If the Vikings go ahead and they give up 3 first-rounders, because that's a talker right now. It's, you know, people want the Vikings to find their guy, but they don't want to cough up, you know, the first-rounder this year, the 23rd overall pick from the Texans, and next year's first-round pick, which could be a top 10 pick with this team, you know, as they kind of sort through the dead cap and the first year of the post-Cousins era. Is 3 first-rounders too much to give up for a guy like May? Or could they wait until later in the draft and maybe take a guy like JJ McCarthy, or we'll get to a guy like Michael Penix in a second. Like, where are you on kind of the whole spending up and trading for a quarterback argument?
Yeah, and it's a tough one because I think if you want to get JJ McCarthy, man, you might have to trade up to 4 or 3 too, right? You know, it's kind of trending like that, at least from what we've seen, right? And in that scenario, you're probably giving up close to that as well. So that's a tough argument. If you want Michael Penix Jr., right, that's more of a, you might be able to stay at 11 or 23 and get him as well. So that's a different conversation, and we'll get to that later. But with the Drake May, I do think it's worth it. I do think it's worth it. Just looking at the roster right now, you look at Minnesota's roster, you have a solid offensive line. You've still got Justin Jefferson. You've still got Jordan Addison, right? TJ Hockenson. We've talked about the offense. The offense is pretty much close to set. You know, and you got Aaron Jones on a quick one-year deal, right? Not a long-term solution, but I do think you're in a position where you won't have too much turnover. You'll be able to recalibrate pretty quickly. And then you go to the defensive side of the ball. They've gotten some additions. I still think you're working in progress there. But I think the roster is strong enough that you can be aggressive to get a guy like Drake May, get in on the ground floor with him, and then by year two or three of his rookie contract, you're ready to seriously compete. And I think, you know, spending that first rounder next year and the two this year, yeah, it's a tall price to play. But by 2026, you're back in the saddle. You're back where you need to be, and you can really capitalize on that momentum now. So it's a tough, it's a high price for sure. But looking at the talent that he has and how he can be incubated in that system, I think it's a really good fit for him. I think it's a place where he can reach a ceiling, and that ceiling is scary to think about. So thinking about if it's worth it, right? I think it is because he's that highly graded on my board. Other people might disagree, right? Other people might prefer waiting for Penix, and that's okay. There's multiple ways to be successful. But in the NFL, if you have an opportunity like this, sometimes you got to pounce on it, right? We've seen teams get burned by it before. We've also seen teams reap the benefits, right? So there's no solution fits all. I think for Drake May, it is worth it to get him in that system and accelerate that growth.
Well, of course, we have some comments going strong. If you're watching right now, thank you very much. We're joined by Ian Cummings of Pro Football Network discussing Drake May a little bit. Yogi at Fat Boys Football Focus. That's a nice little name there. He says Skull, everyone. So if you got any questions for Ian, or you just want to say Skull, we'll get you on the screen and we'll talk about that a little bit. I wanted to take some time and talk about the other quarterbacks in this draft as well. You touched on it a little bit. JJ McCarthy, you were saying it might cost you the same amount.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Amount of draft capital to go up and get him in this draft. You know, is he a legitimate prospect in your eyes, or is he a prospect that, you know, there's a lot of big arm, there's big athleticism? Like, where do you land here? Because he's one of the fastest risers throughout the draft process.
Yeah, and he's been kind of polarizing, right? Because you look at his profile and he's got 2 years of starting experience, but there's still a sense that you've wanted to see more from him as well, right? And so how do you balance that? That's the biggest thing. I think he's unique because, kind of like Drake May, there are some things that he does very well for his age. I think mechanically, he's a very smooth rotational thrower. I do think he can work within the pocket. He's not super inefficient on his dropback. He's shown he can throw over the middle of the field. I think he's a little hot and cold there for sure. But there are times where he shows that fearlessness to test defenders when they give up their eyes. So I think that's a big thing with him, is that I think the flashes are there. Now, you want to see more consistency. That was a big thing coming into 2023, and we saw it for a little bit, but then down the stretch, they took the ball away from him in big moments. And I think part of that was Michigan had a great running game, a great defense, so they really didn't have to rely on JJ. They were just such a good team that we didn't always see him in those compromising situations, like we saw Caleb Williams try to bring his team back from 50 points down every week, or Drake May, you know, constantly getting in these shootouts, right? We didn't see McCarthy in those high pressure moments as much. Now, that's not McCarthy's fault, but it still leaves us with the question, what do we do with that, right? So I think as a prospect, I think the biggest selling points and the reason that he's rising so much is because he's young and he's talented. Sometimes it's that simple. He's still just 21 years old. He's very athletic. He does have a great arm and a very elastic arm too. You know, I don't think it's quite at the level of Williams or May, but it's still in that great tier. I think it's still in the 80th percentile or 75th percentile where you're getting a really solid arm, right? A guy who can kind of expand the offense outside of the structure and in structure. So you're getting that elevating talent for sure. But the processing is hot and cold, especially on crossers over the middle of the field. And then also the pocket navigation can be a little inconsistent too. He's shown that he can do it, but it's still streaky. A lot of it is hot and cold, kind of turning on, turning off. You wonder if it's all going to click for him at the next level, right? So I think that's kind of where it's tough with him because you're still waiting for him to answer that question. But I do think young, talented, I can see why he's rising so far up the board, and especially with the scarcity of quality quarterbacks in the league. Like if you have a guy who might be a quality starter, you got to pounce on that. And after May and Williams and Daniels, this class is pretty uncertain in that regard. And you look at Penix and Nix, yeah, they're solid prospects, but they're both 24 years old. McCarthy is just 21. So you wonder in 2 years, can he get to that point? So for a lot of teams, it's that projection element. We have a lot of questions that are unanswered, but in the right supporting cast, he might be able to answer those too. And for the Kevin O'Connell and the Vikings, right? You know, working in structure, you know, really efficient dropbacks, accuracy, mechanically sound. Those are some of McCarthy's strengths. So you play into those strengths while he's developing, and it might be able to help him take that next step too. So I think that's the framework that teams are thinking about McCarthy within. There's risk there, but there's also a level that helps raise his floor a little bit operationally.
You touched on Penix a little bit, so I won't spend too much time on it, but he's the guy that's kind of rising up the boards right now, had an excellent pro day. I believe he said something along the lines of, I ain't no bum after his workout, you know, talking to reporters. How do you feel about Penix? Because I watch him, I see the arm talent, I see, you know, the athleticism, that advanced age. You know, if the Vikings were to stay at 11, and they were use that 23rd pick, you know, they could take a defensive player at 11. They could take Penix at 11. Hell, they could take Bo Nix at 23 if they wanted to. You know, how do you feel about Penix specifically? And if they waited until pick number 23 to get him, is that a good strategy for the Vikings? Or do they have to get one of those top four guys you were talking about?
Yeah, I think Penix is my QB5 right now. I've flip-flopped between him and Nix for a little bit, but I'm pretty comfortably sold on Penix as my QB5 now. I think that Penix, the pro day didn't really show us much of what we didn't already know. He's a really good straight line athlete, right? He's got very good speed. That was kind of clear. Went back at Indiana when he played Penn State and had that game-winning diving touchdown, right? That showed you a few things. He's actually a good straight line athlete in space. And he's a phenomenal competitor, right? The toughness, the leadership. I think that's one thing that's going to win over NFL teams is that multiple times in 2023, you saw him visibly gutting through injuries. He was in pain and he was leading his team to comeback wins. That kind of grit and resolve doesn't always come around often. So I think that's going to win over teams for sure. And I think if he can stay healthy, I do think he can be a quality starter. I think there's a more likely path to being a quality starter than, say, a Bo Nix. Or I think the upside is a little higher with Penix because he's got a stronger arm. I think he's got that gunslinger mentality where he's willing to test those windows outside the numbers, hash seam throws too. You know, that drive velocity, he can get it to his guy on a line at 80 miles an hour without breaking a sweat. So that arm strength is really impressive, but he's got the processing ability to pick out those windows too. So that's impressive too. And he wins within the pocket. He's a good pocket navigator. The mechanics can be a little wonky sometimes, but at the pro day, it did look like he was working on that a little bit. So I think the biggest hang up with him is that in the creation phase, not quite as free flowing as some of the other guys in this class. He is a little stiff, a lot stiff in the hips. He's pretty stiff on redirections. And when he needs to evade, there are some delays. I don't think he's a great creator because of that. He's got good straight line speed, but at his size, isn't quite as agile or fluid as a Drake May, right? And then off platform too, not quite as elastic, not quite as balanced with the shoulders. So I do think you're a little more confined to pocket work with him, but in the pocket, he can be very good. So where he goes in the first round and whether he's worth it at 23, it's kind of tough because now that he's passed the medical check at the combine, we don't know where teams are going to value him. Maybe he goes in round two, maybe someone's willing to take him in the teens, right? So maybe if you're Minnesota, you might not be able to get him at 23. So I still think there's a little bit of volatility there, but if he is still there at 23 and you weren't able to trade up for a QB, yeah, I do think that's a viable option because I think, again, in that scheme, drive velocity, giving your guys chances at the catch point, high pointing it, throwing it where only they can get it, I think Penix really plays into that well, and I think he'd be able to thrive in that scheme. So At the right price, I do like him. I do think he can be a quality starter.
A bit of a transition here to the rest of the draft, but Yogi's just going rapid fire in the comments right now. He said thoughts on Dallas Turner, which I assume would be the 11th pick, and Johnny Newton in the first. He also wonders about Michael Pratt and Jordan Travis in the fourth round. As far as the rest of the draft goes, where do you see the strength going, and where do you see guys like Turner and Newton in that first round?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's fun to dream about getting Turner and Newton with those two first round picks, because that would reinvigorate your defense for sure. Dallas Turner, to me, has game record potential, right? 6'3", 247, 34 and a half inch arms, 4.46 speed. You simply don't find prospects like this. They don't come around very often, right? So he's got universal disruptive potential, really explosive, bendy, but has a really good power profile too. Game record in Brian Flores' scheme too. Flores is a maniac. I'd love to see how he'd scheme him opportunities for sure. And then Johnny Newton, I think he's, you know, one of the more flexible defensive tackles that I've seen. Really explosive, really well leveraged, but his ability to pry through blocks and rush from five tech as well is really impressive. So ideally, if you get those two guys, you get two potential blue chip guys. The trade-off is you don't get your quarterback. And Michael Pratt and Jordan Travis, to me, they're in the middle to later rounds for a reason. Jordan Travis is a great athlete. He's a great creator. He's a great leader as well. Coming back from that injury and you know, still being engaged with his team. But his arm is average at best. I don't think he has the velocity to stick as a long-term starter. I think he might have some Taylor Heinicke to him where, you know, if he does have to play, he's mobile enough, he's competitive enough that he can keep you in the game, but you might stall out with him and you might be stuck with your same QB quandary. And then Michael Pratt, I just don't think he has high-end tools. You know, he's a decent athlete. He's got a decent arm. I think he's got good anticipation and processing and accuracy. But again, I liken him to maybe an Aiden O'Connell type of pick who went in round four last year and gave the Raiders solid reps when he had to play. But again, a guy that leaves you in limbo at quarterback. So I think if you're the Vikings, I think the best, if you do want to balance that, I think the best scenario would be Dallas Turner at 11. And then if you can get Michael Penix at 23, I think that's the best compromise in that specific scenario.
If the Vikings, and this is just going a little bit deeper here, because Joe Milton was mentioned in the news by Kyle Rudolph saying the Vikings shouldn't trade up. They should wait until the fourth round and get a guy that's a freak athlete. We also heard Rick Spielman mention that Spencer Rattler was a quarterback that the Vikings should be looking at. Guys like Milton and Rattler, I kind of agree with you there. Like, if you take one of those guys, you're just kind of running it back and doing the same things over again, expecting a different result. And I think the other thing that we have to look at is, you know, these guys, A, they're there for a reason, but Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell, they're in the third year of four-year contracts. So if they play this conservatively, you know, I don't think it's going to end well from a long-term perspective, especially when they're trying to get the trust of ownership and the Wilfs and everything else.
Yeah, for sure. And when I say a guy's there for a reason, I do want to clarify, like, we don't know what's going to happen with these guys, right? Brock Purdy was the last pick in the draft and he's become a Pro Bowler, right? So you never know what's going to happen. But at the same time, Brock Purdy fell into a legitimately perfect situation where Kyle Shanahan was able to play to his strength. He's got great weapons, right? So there's multiple variables that go into it. But as an NFL draft analyst, my job is ultimately to scout these guys, grade them, and figure out not only where I would pick them, but kind of, you know, read the tea leaves and see where other teams might consider them too. So, you know, looking at that broad scale view, Spencer Rattler, I think would be the best mid-round option if that's what you're trying to do, is strike gold in the middle rounds, because his arm talent is legit, man. He can sling it. He can throw at different arm angles. He can push it outside the numbers too. And from all accounts, he has matured since his Oklahoma days. He had a very good Senior Bowl week. Not a great athlete, more of a change of direction guy within the pocket, but not a guy who's going to make you miss or kind of expand seams in the running game. But I do think his throwing upside is good enough that if you can get him in round three, if you can trade up and get him, yeah, that could be a solid investment, especially if you have a kind of a spot starter bridge QB to help him develop. Joe Milton is a seventh round PFA target for me. I wouldn't take him in round four or round five. I think the arm strength is really appealing with him. He's got a rocket for sure. But on that Tennessee tape, his processing was a big issue for me. I think, you know, a lot of one read throws, and even on those, you know, there's full second delays on route breaks. not a great anticipator. I don't know if he has the processing ability to survive at the NFL level as a quarterback. So, you know, a little bit, the arm strength is good, but if you can't channel it with proper operation, you're kind of stuck. So that's kind of where I feel about those guys. If you are going to go that route, which again, a lot of risk that goes involved with it, I think Rattler could be a decent one.
Last question outside of the quarterback structure. This is a deep draft. A lot of people have told me they've been looking forward to this draft well advanced over a year. Outside of the quarterback position, who are you pounding the table for in this draft?
Shoot, man. How much time you got? No, I mean, it's a good question. It is. I think I'm trying to narrow it down in my head. A couple guys, and this the first one won't be a target for the Vikings because they got their tight end, but Ben Sinnott from Kansas State, love his game, 6'4", 250, really fluid, really varied route runner, really good rack as well, strong hands over the middle. I think he can be the Sam Laporta of this class. Jalen Polk from Washington is one that I'm a big fan of, 6'1", 203, very alignment versatile, very fluid route runner, but then really hands of glue at the catch point. He will come away with anything, really clutch player with some rack utility to him. Mike Sainristil still from Michigan is one that I would take in a heartbeat. I think he's going to be an older rookie, but he's a former wide receiver and he's got that dog in him, man. He's such a competitive player. Very smart too, though. He can play the slot. He can play field safety. He can even play the boundary if you need him to. I think he features best as a slot defender, but very explosive, competitive, agile, fluid. He's got great pedal technique, press man, off man, and a playmaker at the catch point as well. So those are a few. And then one more, Max Melton from Rutgers is another one. 5'11", but 32-inch arm. So he's low to the ground. He's fluid, really good on transitions, but he can disrupt the ball. He's got great long speed as well, really physical. Again, slot boundary versatility. And I'm sorry, they keep coming to me, but Dadrian Taylor-Demerson, safety from Texas Tech, that's another one. Versatile between single high and two high. Really competitive in the box, but he's got really good playmaking instincts on the back end too. So I could go on and on. There's a lot of guys that I like in this class, but those are just a few.
It's a fun draft. You know, looking, I mean, obviously most of our attention has been on the quarterback position. I like the receivers in this class. I think it's really deep. I think, you know, you got the high-end guys like Marvin Harrison Jr. and Roman Dunze, but you also have, you know, some middle-round guys where, you know, the Vikings lost KJ Osborne in free agency, but you could probably get a guy fifth, sixth, seventh rounds. And you know, I think corners too are pretty strong in this draft. So, I mean, this is if a team is looking for a reboot, and I think that's why it's great they have two first round picks now. You know, you can go to a guy like, or you can go to a team like New England rather, and be like, hey, we got two picks in this loaded draft. You don't know what's coming in 2025. You can take those. You can reboot a team. And I think we're going to see a lot of contributors from this class overall.
For sure. And I think one more guy, because you mentioned KJ Osborne leaving in the slot. If you need a slot receiver, Malik Washington from Virginia is probably my favorite. 5'8", 190. So another really stout, compact guy, but a really explosive route runner. He's great on digs and posts and things like that. Really twitched up competitor, and he's got great rack ability too, explosive in open space. And then at the catch point as well, you wouldn't expect a 5'8 guy to compete as well as he does. You know, he plays beyond his frame. He will convert even if he's got a defender inside his frame. Just another guy. I think if you're Minnesota, especially if you need a wide receiver three, there are a lot of guys in this class who could profile well.
Awesome. So with all your draft stuff, what are you working on at Pro Football Network right now?
Yeah, so a lot of stuff. I'm trying to collect it all in my head here. We got more scouting reports. We got the MDS, which the mock draft simulator actually had a really exciting update today. You can now do multi-user mock drafts, and we'll be chipping away at it. We've still got, you know, updates and improvements to make, but it's at the place now where we can share it with the public, and we've had a lot of exciting results so far. So if you want to do a mock draft, whether it's solo or multi-user, head over to that. And then we got scouting reports again. I think I said that already. We got rankings too. I'm finalizing my big board on April 15th. So there'll be top 10 rankings positionally that will flow from that. And then also just today, I started working on my preliminary 2025 NFL draft board. So we'll be rolling that out at some point as well. So we got a lot of balls to juggle, but we're doing it. We're having fun doing it. And we got a month left until the NFL draft.
And where can people follow all of it on social media?
Yeah, you can find me at IC_draft on social media. Any questions that I wasn't able to answer here, feel free to tag me there and ask the question. I'll be responsive for sure. You can find all my content at Pro Football Network, which is at PFN365.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on, Ian. We definitely appreciate the time, but that's all the time we have for the Viking podcast today. You can follow me at The Real Chris Shod, X, Instagram, TikTok, all of those cool things. I'm cranking content out. But we do this podcast every Monday with a late week episode right here on the Viking Age YouTube channel. We're in podcast form on Apple and Spotify the very next day. However you consume us, though, make sure you rate, comment, like, and subscribe so you never miss a new episode and we can spread the word to the masses. For Ian Cummings, I am Chris Shad. This has been the Viking Age Podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.